Good day, I'm Ann Dolinchik and you're listening to Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing. In today's episode, we're in conversation with Ryan Silberman, an industrial engineer and 2014 Jewish Entrepreneur of the Year. He successfully co-founded, built and exited ad tech company Popeye Media, Facebook's only marketing partner in Africa. Currently, he is the CEO of Webfluential, an influencer marketing platform reaching over 2 billion people. Grab a coffee and listen as we discuss where South Africa fits into the global influencer marketing landscape, new tech and AI tools, and how it assists with creating more effective influencer campaigns, and the David Guetta and Mum Champagne collaboration we weren't even aware of.
If you enjoy this podcast, you will also enjoy our fortnightly newsletter that keeps you up to date with influencer news from around the world. Subscribe at the link in the show notes.
This podcast series has been made possible through an exclusive sponsorship from SA's number one nano influencer platform, The Salt. Most brands have a communication line to their existing customers, but not a way to get them to have additional positive brand conversations. The Salt solves the problem by identifying brand fans and getting them to talk more about their positive brand experiences. The Salt have a database of over 140,000 registered brand fans and in-depth information on each to perfectly match your brand to the right influencers. Reach out to them now and see what they can do for you.
Good afternoon, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining us today. Before we get into this conversation today, please can you give us a bit more detail about who you are and where your expertise lie in this industry?
Thanks, Anne. Thanks for the opportunity. It's great to be here. So I'm an engineer by profession, and I've been in marketing for 15 years plus. I co-founded a company called Popeye Media, which is still today Africa's only Facebook marketing partner. And in about 2015, I invested in a company called Webfluential. And today I find myself as the CEO of Webfluential.
Amazing. So you're quite good. You know everything about agencies. You've started one. You're now fully invested in one. And you're the CEO.
Well, I don't know if I know everything, but I've certainly seen quite a bit over the years, yeah.
So we are looking forward to you sharing your experience with us today. I think let's start at the beginning. I mean, influencer marketing really started kind of gaining traction locally about 10, 11 years ago. I remember it was about, 2009, 2010, people were really starting to look at this influencer marketing thing, but we didn't call it that. There was no real kind of word for it. We were just kind of looking at bloggers, and these bloggers had some Twitter profiles, and they gained some really good followings. So obviously that's all changed. We now have Instagram and TikTok and a million other platforms. So what I want to chat to you about is in the beginning when we were using bloggers as influencers, which we would call them now, did we have any kind of main metrics that we actually used to measure campaigns when we used these guys? And I know also back then it was more like we would incorporate them into launches and ask them just to write an article or two. But how did we measure that to feed back to clients?
Sure. So I think maybe just perhaps to take a step back and understand influencer and influence. So I think if you think about advertising, I mean, the very first adverts, you know, what comes to mind, for example, is the Marlboro Man. I mean, in essence, Marlboro Man was an influencer, even though it was just a television advert. And even, you know, back to the 60s and 70s with James Bond, you know, the movie, you know, the actors and the movie star. In essence, James Bond was an influencer. You know, every movie had a car, an Aston Martin, a Jaguar, a BMW. He had a watch. He had a suit. He drank a particular drink, and so, you know, this idea of influencer marketing, even though the term has only been coined recently, actually it cuts to the core of advertising. It's just, I think, become more widespread. So, you know, getting onto your specific question around bloggers and whatnot. So I think bloggers, I wouldn't actually even call them influencers. I mean, bloggers have always been around. If you think of journalists who publish articles in magazines, So, you know, the digital age came along and enabled anyone to start writing about a topic that they were interested in, and hence, you know, the blogs sprouted up. But to specifically answer your question around metrics, I think it started with reach. So, you know, a brand would contract with a blogger to reach their audience as bloggers became more popular. But perhaps even a step back is, why did they want bloggers to write about their brand or experience with the brand? And really, again, it cuts to the heart of advertising or influencer marketing specifically, which is this word trust or authenticity or trusted referrals. You know, if you have a brand that wants to talk about themselves, well, you're not going to pay too much attention. And certainly with mass media and all the content available to us today, we tend to trust our friends or independent people much more than, you know, listening to a brand. And if you look at the research over the years, it's quite clear that trusted referrals were what brands were after through blogs. And then specifically around metrics, yes, it was reach. It was which audiences were we reaching? I think SEO, by the way, also played a big role in the early days with search engines, you know, coming to the fore. Before Google even, so, you know, I don't know if people can think back to those days, but there were lots of search engines and search engine optimization, so how to get your content visible and how to generate, you know, good search results and traffic to your site. So all of those played a role in, I think, the early days of blogging specifically, but as I said, influencer marketing really dates back to the beginning of advertising.
Oh, and I completely agree with you. I think also just influencing, now that we've got a name for it, but it's always been around. It was like your community leaders. It was your kind of, you know, families. It was your friends. It was people you work with. It was just people that you kind of trusted in the community. And then, yes, absolutely, we had big influencers come along in the form of movie stars who were huge for decades and decades. But I think to your point is what we're looking at these days is that trusted element. Now there's platforms for people to actually be on where they can monetize this type of influence. And that's where brands really kind of started taking note. And bloggers were great. They could write. They had really good skills. They turned into this amazing photographers, if you look at how blogging progressed as well back in the day. And yeah, absolutely. We tried to like kind of tap into their audiences, and we had that reach going. So things have obviously changed a lot. That was the beginning of what we would term influencer marketing, especially in South Africa. And I was just wondering how things have kind of changed in expectation-wise. Now when we look at, there's still lots of bloggers around who's still very much trusted. Plus we've got now content creators and other types of influencers that's across different platforms. But back then, what would brands typically offer a blogger, and how has it changed now from the expectations from that influencer side versus what the brands are also expecting from them and what they reciprocate in giving?
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, in the early days, product reviews, so the bloggers would get the actual product. They would get to experience and perhaps even keep it or drive it for for a couple of months, whatever the case may be. But as the industry started to grow and, you know, the opportunity to become a full-time blogger, a mommy blogger, for example, you know, started to arise. So this became a paid opportunity. So I mean, what I'd like to do is potentially divide the conversation into two. So if you think of the traditional PR firms, even before, let's say, influencers, you know, the term was coined, you had PR firms who would send out products for reviews. And typically, the gift of the product was enough. But as the power started to shift to the blogger or the influencer, and we can talk a little bit about that power dynamic, which I think is interesting. So, bloggers or influencers started to demand, you know, actual payment for their time, for their energy, for their content creation, and for potentially reaching their audience. So over time, you see how this has changed. And I think it kind of also mirrors, you know, if you think of the early days of digital and digital advertising, where it started was around, the concept of paying for eyeballs, much like television or radio. So cost per thousand impressions, you know, that was the measurement. But as you know, time went on, as technology got more sophisticated, as brands started to ask the question, which they still do, by the way, you know, which part of my marketing budget is actually working? So the metrics started to change. So, for example, it moved from, you know, cost per thousand impressions to cost per click, and even then to cost per lead or cost per test drive or cost per sale even. So, you know, so the whole industry has evolved, and you know, that's where we find ourselves today.
So that is interesting. And that leads perfectly into my next question. It's like, when did we see this big shift starting to happen, and what led to this? Was it purely where that power dynamic shifted, as you say? But how did that come about to where we actually find ourselves today?
That's a very, very interesting question. You know, the way I like to think of it is really with the evolution of mankind. You know, if you think of how advertising has evolved, the whole point of a brand was to manufacture a product, mass produce it as cheap as possible, get it onto a shelf in a retail store, and then broadcast on television and radio to make people aware, who then go into store and purchase the product. So the power was really in the brand's favor. The brand owned the ability to, you know, they owned how should the brand look and feel, you know, how should we speak about the brand, what should the personality be, etc., etc. But as we've evolved as mankind, and as our tools and access to these tools have changed, so any person could literally start a blog, a website, even produce a product much cheaper than a big brand. You know, the Dollar Shave Club, for example, where you would buy a razor every month for $1, which was eventually bought by a large brand for, I think, $1 billion or more, is a perfect example of that. And there's a little story I heard once, which I think, you know, illustrates how this power dynamic has changed. And that is, in the old days, I'm talking 20, 30 years ago, if you think of the host of a party, the brand hosted the party, and the brand controlled who would be let into the party, and you know what drinks would be served, what food would people eat. But today, the party is hosted by the consumer, and the brand is outside, like knocking on the door, please let me in. And you know, the way that the brands today can participate in that conversation is by leveraging someone inside the party, which is ultimately, you know, the influencer, and what's given rise to influencer marketing. So yeah, that's how I like to think about it.
I love that story because it does just kind of sum it up really nicely. And I feel like if you tell that to anyone who's kind of wondering or not really understanding, that is like a perfect way to sum it up. So thanks for that. I'm going to use it. I'm going to steal it, Ryan.
Great. I stole it too, so go for it.
Amazing. So then when we look at tech, and you also just kind of touched on it, like our tech has really changed over the last couple of years, especially with the rise of our influencer marketing. We needed more tech and more tools to really start deep diving into metrics to give brands deeper insights that they can then use going forward as well when they want to do other campaigns and understanding their consumer a lot better. But we also have AI these days who not only kind of look at our audiences and how we match our influencers, but it's also really great at kind of delivering those results when we want to track ROI, whatever that may mean for that client or that brand. But really, it happened, like for me, it just feels like overnight we went from vanity metrics to this really cool tech. How far have we really progressed with that in the last couple of years?
Hashtag no filter. That's how this podcast is delivering real down-to-earth stories told by real people. For an influencer campaign that takes brand conversation to everyday real-life situations, go check out thesalt.co.za. They are the undisputed experts in real influencer marketing.
So I think that, you know, technology is a wonderful thing, and it's certainly advanced, you know, significantly every year. You know, in our industry, literally, if you're not innovating, you know, every 6 months, you really are falling behind. But at the end of the day, we're dealing with humans. You know, we're dealing with people who have feelings, who have emotions, who are entrenched in different cultures, and technology can only get you so far. So that's the one side of the coin. On the other side is, again, this old movie, which I love, which is called What Women Want. What do women want? Have you ever seen that movie with Mel Gibson?
I have. I think that was somewhere in the 90s or early 2000s. Correct. Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, by the same token, what do brands want? What does a company want? And there's really one answer to that. Well, there could be many, but ultimately it all leads to sales. Okay, so a brand wants to drive sales, and that's really why advertising and marketing, you know, exists. And so all this technology, you know, enables us to really get better and more efficient at driving those sales. So, you know, some insights into artificial intelligence and technology. So yes, I think there are lots of tools to be able to search and discover and identify particular influencers who might be a good fit with your audience. But I think really companies and brands obsess too much about that, you know, particularly given the understanding that organic reach on most social networks is not very good. And so ultimately, does the following and the audience of the influencer play as much a role as we all give or like to think it does? That's a question mark. So yeah, at the end of the day, it's the ability to have the right, we have four pillars that we like to think of it. So yes, you need technology, and that helps you with workflow. It helps you with matching the right brand to the right influencer. You need inventory, which is really the influencers and the creators. You need good creators. You need a large force or database of these influencers. But the last two pillars really are, for me, most important, and that is the strategy. So great, you've got the technology, this AI, you've identified the influencer, but now what are we going to do with the influencer? And that's a big question. And even if you know what to do, if you get the first three pillars right, the last pillar is on the execution of the influencer campaign, which is where, by the way, 90% of failures happen. You know, you might get the first three pillars right. It's all down to the execution. So how do you get the influencer to post at the right time, to the right channel, to make sure it's brand safe, to make sure the brand has approved it, and how do you do this all at scale? So technology plays a great role in the workflow, in the tracking, in identifying those influencers, but really it all comes down to people at the end of the day.
I love how you unpack that, because I also have a similar view to you. And I think that human connection will always remain. And that's kind of why people follow other people online, on their blogs, on social media, because they feel some kind of connection or aspiration to be that person. So that's never going to go. And I completely agree that we use our influencers more as a value, culture fit, or a fit to the campaign as well, to get that aesthetic right. But then with the algorithms, the way it is, like you say, we're only seeing about, reaching 10 to 15% of organic audiences these days. Is it that important? Or is it more important that we have the right creative? And when we then use that creative to target specific audiences, using technology, using performance media, is that not what's more important at this point? So Ryan, that said, where do you think we will be in the next 2-3 years? I mean, this industry travels at the speed of light. So even looking at next year could be interesting. But where do you think we're going with our technology, with our measurement, with reporting on certain factors to actually really give our brands more insights?
So I think there's a number of trends shaping this industry, which is very interesting to think about. So let me maybe talk through a couple of them. So on the one hand, you've got this direct relationship between the size of your audience and your level of influence. So if you think of it on a graph, literally the smaller your audience, the higher the degree of influence you have. Quite literally, it's a straight line. And to maybe digest that a little bit, if you perhaps are in the market for a new phone or a new car, or you would like to experience some new music, or, you know, or you're in an area and you want a great coffee, you know, you're going to basically talk to those you trust, and you're going to ask them to say, what would you recommend for my particular, you know, which coffee shop should I attend if I'm in Cape Town for the day, or whatever it might be. And so that is a huge force which is shaping, you know, the industry, given the advancement of technology. And that's evident in the rise of nano influencers. So, you know, if you think about those two points, quite literally, the smaller your following, the higher the degree of influence, which means that, and by the way, just in marketing in general, we talk about segmentation, customer segments, and the ability to customize content to a particular type of audience. The smaller the segment, the higher the success rate, because you can talk the same language. So it's actually the same trend, but applied to nano influencers or influencers. Nano influencers is the future. And so the technology to enable identifying, working with nano influencers will grow. So I think that's one trend that's shaping the industry. I think the second trend, which is very interesting, particularly from a media and advertising perspective, is privacy and data privacy. So if you look at the big trends overseas, particularly in the US and UK and Western countries, is iOS, the limitation of enabling brands to reach people through iOS is becoming a problem. Likewise, if you look at the cookie crumbling, or you know, enforcing people, brands, or the guidelines, the regulations around having access to people through cookies, through their digital footprint, is another huge trend. So if we take these two trends and we look at where this is all going, the power is going to be even more in the hands of the influencers, because really, influencers are private entities versus the big Facebooks and the Googles who own these mass communities. So now the ability to reach people at scale through their niche followings will be directly to influencers. And so there's this power shift that will happen in the future. So I hope I summarized it well, but I think those are a couple of the big trends, you know, shaping our industry going forward.
No, absolutely. And it does make you think, and you're so right, that power is shifting. People are opting out to get served certain ads. And now here you have influencers who have the power. They've got opted-in audiences who want to see their content. So again, I think taking back to what you were saying earlier about executing campaigns, it's incredibly important to make sure that you have the right people to speak to the right people, so we can target the right people at the end of the day. So Ryan, then when we look at the South African influencer market or our landscape, and we look at other countries that are obviously a lot more developed than us, particularly if we're looking at UK, US, Australia, and China, who's miles ahead of us, where does South Africa kind of fall into like the global kind of landscape when we look at influencer marketing?
So to be honest, I don't think we're that far behind. I really think it's a function of our the size of our population, as opposed to, you know, our advancement in technology or anything else. So if you look at South Africa, we are culturally diverse, which brings amazing content opportunities and, you know, rich conversations, you know, niche audiences. And we have the tools, you know, tools today, both homegrown and, you know, grown overseas can be leveraged anywhere in the world. It's a global economy. So I actually don't think we're that far behind. And in fact, in a lot of cases, we are leading. You know, I think back to a campaign we did, over 10 years ago, where we launched a Peugeot card, a Peugeot 208. And I never forget, it was our first campaign. We didn't even know it was an influencer campaign. And we put a celebrity radio host in a car. We put a camera and he went riding around the car, picking up people for 2 weeks. And that was live streamed. And so that was like a world first. Nobody had ever done that 10, 15 years ago. So I think we right up there. I think it's a function of population. So if you look at the macro or celebrities from the US, for example, these are movie stars and they are exposed to global audiences versus our macro influencers who perhaps are just locally known. And really, that's a function of our population and the economies as opposed to the technology.
Yeah, absolutely. And I 100% agree with you. And I also think, to your point, we are so unique that we bring such dynamic extra flavor that you can't see anywhere else in the world. And I suppose that is with every market, they bring their own flair. But are there certain trends that, because we might not be miles behind, but we are a little bit behind when it comes to following trends. Are there a couple of trends that we've recognized, but we've realized, this is not for our local kind of market? And do we kind of create our own little trends that we see other countries aren't doing?
Yeah, I think most definitely. I mean, it would be difficult to pick out, you know, specific trends, but again, I think it's shaped by our culture. So if you think of our languages, our humor, you know, what shapes our society, you won't really find that. It won't really mean anything to anybody overseas, but to us, it's, you know, we're really passionate about braaiing and rugby and, Afrikaans and, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff which just have no place anywhere else in the world. So I think we definitely create our own trends, and we lend from, you know, from overseas as well.
And I do love our markets, especially in the influencer marketing space. It's just, to your point, like we have all these beautiful cultures that's just like a melting pot. And that content creation is amazing when you look across brands and what they need. It is actually really beautiful to observe. And to that, I want to ask you, I know you spoke about the Peugeot campaign that you guys didn't even know was an influencer campaign, which actually sounds like it was amazing. I would love to go read up more about that. But was there a campaign over maybe the last year that really stuck out for you, especially taking into consideration how far we've come with AI and tech and matching influencers and brands and informing our strategy? Is there anything that stood out for you?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things. So I think locally, you'd be surprised, but some of the campaigns are leveraging TikTok to sell car insurance, believe it or not. And those campaigns are actually outperforming, you know, your traditional digital marketing through Google and Facebook. You know, and I think it speaks to the tool, you know, the ability for an influencer or a creator or anybody to create content which is meaningful, which connects with an audience, and then to scale that to the right people and enable those people to then get a quote and take up insurance. So that really is one that comes to mind. But I think if I had to think of perhaps two campaigns, one recent, maybe one not so recent, which I think illustrate, you know, where we're going and what brands should be striving for. So let me start with a recent one. There was an award-winning campaign by Cheetos. I don't know if you know Cheetos. They're chips. So they launched a popcorn product, and you know they looked at insights. So you know, so they did some research into how people experience the product, and one of the insights revealed that actually people don't enjoy it because when they eat Cheetos, their hands get full of, what do you call it, crumbs or whatever, you know. They get orange.
It's orange and it's sticky and
and it's like disgusting. But that revealed some insight from a lot of their consumers that actually, if I've eaten Cheetos, then I can kind of like opt out from life. So if my boss comes to me and hands me a report, I'm like, no, sorry, my hands are messy, and the boss will say, oh, sorry, I don't want to ruin my report. Or if your friend needs help moving the couch, you can opt out of that. You can't touch it. And so they created this campaign with, you remember MC Hammer? You can't touch this. And that became quite a viral campaign just from the insight of understanding consumer behavior and then turning that on its head into a positive, which was an amazing strategy from the particular agency. So that's one campaign that leverages, I suppose, traditional strategic thought, but also leveraging popular culture and influencer, etc. So that's great. And then I think one campaign which always stands out for me is, in fact, people probably don't realize it's a campaign, but there's a song that was written by David Guetta, or however you pronounce it, which is called Dangerous. If you watch the music video, it's about Formula One drivers or racing car drivers. And this song, I think at the time, it really topped the charts. It was an amazing, amazing song. But I actually learned only afterwards that it was a collaboration with an alcohol brand where the idea of drinking champagne, particularly in a younger audience, was shifting. I mean, younger audiences were not drinking champagne. And so the brief to David was, how do we get younger audiences to consider champagne? And so he wrote the song and made this video, because in Formula One, what do you do when you celebrate at the end of the race? Well, you celebrate with champagne. And that was an amazing case study of, you know, embedding, you know, using culture, using aspiration, using music to spread that message subtly. I mean, I didn't even know that was a brand campaign, but I think those are probably the best examples. And that's a great case study, which I always, think about and refer back to.
Every race we watched, we imagined it was us standing on that podium, spraying the crowd with champagne, sitting in one of those cars, navigating every curve, fighting every battle on the track. We live every moment.
That is insane. I didn't know that was a brand collaboration either. And I would love to know if it actually shifted the needle and saw younger people consuming champagne more. So Ryan, that comes to the end of our podcast episode. Thank you so much for chatting to us, for giving us some insights, and for spreading your wisdom to us. But before we go, would you please tell everyone where they can find you online if they want to learn more about you and what you do? Where's the best place for them to find you?
Sure, they can just search for my name on LinkedIn. It's probably the best way to find me. And yeah, all my details are over there. So yeah, I look forward to it. And thank you so much for hosting me.
Thank you so much, Ryan. And I'm sure we'll chat soon.
This podcast series has been made possible by The Salt. the influencer company that turns influence into affluence. In the same way that information is presented in this podcast in a relatable and authentic way, The Salt gets your customers to tell their real brand stories to their community. Go to thesalt.co.za to learn more about how The Salt can help you grow your business.